From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA. Bossa Nova. It literally means the new wave, the new thing, and it was the new thing in the 1950s in Brazil. The music is cool and sultry, and when you think of Bossa Nova, who comes to mind? Antonio Carlos Jobim, and of course, Brazil 66, led by the legendary pianist Sergio Mendes.
I was playing the music that I felt then, you know, it was like we're using, you know, the great themes of Brazilian songs and improvising on them.
On today's program, I have an extended conversation with Sergio Mendes about his career and his recent collaborations with artists who are making Bossa Nova once again the new thing. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Joining us to discuss the news of the week affecting the Latino community is María Elena Salinas, national news anchor of Univision, the Spanish language television network. Hola, María Elena.
Hi, María.
So in groundbreaking action, consulates from 9 Latin American countries have formed something that they're calling the Coalition of Latin American Consulates in New York. This is in response to escalating deportations of their citizens from the United States. So what's going on here, María Elena?
Well, you know, it's 9 countries from Latin America, so far 9 countries that have decided to create this coalition. And as you say, it's something that's unprecedented because a diplomat's job is to look out for their country's interest abroad and also for its citizens living abroad. But, you know, given the circumstances in which there are so many immigrants from so many Latin American countries here in the United States, they decided to join forces to confront some common problems. And you mentioned one of them was one of the main problems definitely is immigration. The deportation of their citizens, the harassment of their citizens. And I guess the main objective of this group is going to be, of this coalition, I should say, is going to show a united front when meeting with immigration officials. They're very limited when it comes to trying to influence public policy in a foreign country, so they hope that as a group, that their positions or, you know, expressing their concerns is going to be taken a little bit more seriously. And, you know, they plan to hold other types of events also that will benefit their respective communities. And they're hoping that, you know, more countries will join them. So far, it's Mexico, Colombia, Costa Rica, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Peru, the Dominican Republic, and Uruguay. So those are the countries so far, and they're hoping that others will join them.
So is there any immediate response officially, because this is unprecedented, officially from the United States?
It's nothing official. It's a group getting together and said, we're going to form this coalition and, you know, we're going to meet and try to analyze what our areas of concern are, what our common areas of concern are.
Not such a friendly topic, but it's definitely one to express their concerns. María Elena, let's move on to a topic that we've talked about before on our Week in Review. But this time there's a new survey that confirms what many of us have already known, which is that Latinos die on the job at higher rates. Most of those casualties coming from the construction industry. Anyone who lives in any place where there's any construction, you see many Latino workers. What's this new survey? What are we learning from this?
The reasons seem to be, you know, first of all, because Latinos tend to hold these high-risk jobs more than other racial groups, but then there's also the language barrier that comes into play. You know, poor training, not understanding the rules or the risks on the job, not getting the proper supervision from, you know, from people who understand them and who can communicate with them. You know, one of the interesting facts is that of this survey of on-the-job deaths is that they are higher among foreign-born Latinos than native-born Latinos. Interesting to see. And they're mostly foreign-born workers who are coming into these different areas because they cannot find jobs in some of the states and cities that, you know, where you traditionally have a higher community. They're going into other areas where they think they have a better chance of getting jobs, but they are taking more risks, like we see in this report.
It's sad. Those are our real human lives we're talking about here. All right, let's move on to something that really has a totally different tone, which it has to do with vacationing in the Caribbean, because with the rising jet fuel costs and the weakening economy, it looks like a lot of people are not able to take those vacations to Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic. So what does it mean for the Caribbean? What kind of an impact is this going to have?
It could be a serious problem, because there are many of these destinations in the Caribbean whose economies depend on tourism. And, you know, the Caribbean, for example, last year had 15 million visitors. So many of these islands, you know, they've invested heavily on their tourism attractions, on resorts. But there's a fear that the high cost of gas and the crisis in the airline industry in the U.S. is going, you know, to hurt these countries in the Caribbean. You know, the biggest carrier to the island is American Airlines, and it's already announced that it's going to cut flights just to Puerto Rico alone by almost half by September. And it's also going to cut flights to the Dominican Republic and other islands in the Caribbean, Antigua, St. Martin, Aruba. And there's concern that this is going to affect the cruise ship industry also. So, you know, there's a lot of repercussions because of what is happening. And maybe, you know, the ones that will be benefiting from all this is some smaller airline carriers and European airlines that are planning to increase their services to the Caribbean to try to capture this tourism market.
All right, María Elena, thanks for joining us.
Take care.
María Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. For over 40 years, Brazilian pianist Sergio Mendes has been one of the most innovative musicians on the global stage. Sergio's collaborations with bossa nova greats like Antonio Carlos Jobim and jazz stars like Herbie Mann and Cannonball Adderley helped to introduce American audiences to the music of Brazil.
Mas que nada, sai da minha frente que eu quero passar, pois o samba está animado, o eu quero é samba, este samba que é misto de maracatu, é samba de preto veio, samba de preto do.
Sergio Mendes continues in that work today with new collaborations with hip-hop star will.i.am. Sergio's newest album is called Encanto, and we're very pleased to have Sergio with us in the studio today. Welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So let's go back to the very beginning. What were you hearing? What were the sounds of Rio in the 1960s?
There were a few clubs around Copacabana in those days. The one I'm referring especially is a club called the Bottles Bar.
Bottles Bar. And what, the walls were made out of like little pieces
No, just said, you know, it's a Bottles Bar, early 60s. And so the Bottles Bar was like the where everybody met every night, musicians and jam sessions.
And how old were you then?
I was about 20. And then I started playing jazz. I started listening to jazz records.
So where was the jazz coming into your home?
Friends of mine that showed me jazz records. In those days, imported records from the United States. They were very hard to get. And I was fascinated by what I heard. Dave Brubeck and Art Tatum and Bud Powell, Horace Silver, all the great pianists. I love the harmonies, I love the, you know, the drumming, and I love the whole language of jazz. It was something so new for me. I never heard it before. We didn't have jazz in Brazil. And I mean, we had samba, which was our music, and so when I went to Rio 6 years later, or 7 years later, to start playing in clubs and putting bands together, you know, quartets and sextets, and now that's when bossa nova is starting. And then the music you hear was the music of Antonio Carlos Jobim.
Ah, porque estou tão sozinho. Ah, porque tudo é tão triste. Ah, beleza que existe. A
beleza que não é só minha, que também passa sozinha.
You know, the beautiful melodies, and he used to come to the club, and so we became friends. He wrote arrangements for my first album, and I had a band called the Bossa Rio. There was the Bossa Nova Festival at Carnegie Hall in 62, and we all came.
And that was your first time?
My first time in America, in
New York. Let me ask you this. What do you hear then as a Brazilian musician now in New York for the first time in the 1960s?
Well, first of all, I wanted to, you know, the idea was to play the concert, which, you know, we're all very nervous about. I was, being a young kid and with a band and playing at Carnegie Hall, first time in the United States, and, you know, meeting people like Stan Getz and Dizzy Gillespie, and, you know.
Wow.
You know, and then the next day going to Birdland to hear Cannonball Adderley, and he invited me to make an album with him. So that was like, they were like wonderful experiences, you know.
Cannonball Adderley, I mean, this is like one of those, you know, one of those iconic figures in music, and he approached you.
Right, yeah, somebody introduced us, and so he asked me if I, you know, go on stage and play something with my band and his band, so we kind of jammed, and next morning he said, let's make an album together, so, which was great. So that was my first experience here.
At that point, we're already then combining the bossa and the jazz.
I was playing the music that I felt then, you know. I was like, yeah, I mean, in a way, we're using, you know, the great themes of Brazilian songs and improvising on them. Instead of using North American songs, we're using South American Brazilian songs as a theme. So we're doing, you know, Ela Carioca and Desafinado, all the great Jobim songs. Moacir Santos, which is another great composer, that he was my teacher, and he was also a very important figure for the Bossa Nova and the Bossa Nova times. You know, Moacir Santos, great composer, arranger. So my second album, he made arrangements for me, wrote arrangements, and Jobim also. It was a wonderful time. It was great to be working with, first of all, the sextet Bossa Rio was great. You know, I had two trombones, a tenor sax, a piano, bass, and drums. So we're kind of the Art Blakey and the Jazz Masters of Copacabana kind of thing. You know?
I love that.
Yeah. But playing Brazilian music was like the beat, the drummer was playing samba. We're not playing straight ahead jazz. So that was the fun of it.
So is there a lot of improvisation in bossa nova and in samba? Is it something that comes naturally in Brazilian music?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's different. I mean, first of all, the roots of jazz and samba is the same roots, which is African music. But bossa nova was really a timing when, you know, those wonderful songs. It started with Jobim writing a song called Chega de Saudades. Chega de Saudade, and sung by João Gilberto. So that was kind of revolutionized the music, because the harmonies were beautiful and the melody, everything was so hip, and the way that João sang the song.
Vai minha tristeza, e diz a ela que sem ela não pode ser.
And there was a style, you know, the guitar and the very minimalist, and that's what I think attracted musicians like Stan Getz and Charlie Berg. When they heard that kind of music, you know, I think it really inspired them. You know, North went South for inspiration.
So you, and then of course South inspired by North as well, your rendition of Love for Sale, which is...
Oh, that's right. That's on Dance Moderno, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's, in a way, you know, again, North inspiring something in the South.
That's right.
So then we're back to Brazil, 1964, 1965. A really difficult time in Brazil. A military coup occurs.
The day of the revolution, which was 6th of April of 64, my son was born, Rodrigo. I sent a telegram to a friend of mine in São Paulo. All of a sudden, a couple of policemen come to my house, and they thought my telegram was the key of the revolution. So it's a kind of a funny story, but a kind of a weird story, too. So my friend was arrested in São Paulo.
Oh, my goodness.
And I went to be interrogated.
On the day of your son's birth?
On the day of I had to go with the police guys to show that he existed.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they thought my telegram was a coded kind of a thing for guerrilla or whatever. And I was not. I was into Charlie Parker, man. I was like, that was my revolution, you know. I was listening to bebop. And it was so surrealistic.
Because you never thought
because I was never involved with anything. My friend was a painter in São Paulo, an artist.
But was it strange to be seeing what was happening to you?
Yeah,
it
was kind of a weird thing. And that's when I said, you know what? I'm out of here.
You felt it.
I felt it, yes. So I'm going. And I said, I want to go to America. So we came to L.A. So an invitation came to do an album for Capitol Records.
And you named your group Brazil 65.
That's right. That's
and
right,
the
65? Because that was the year, and I was from Brazil, so it's obvious that I would be called that. And we did an album, and then the band went back to Brazil. And I've stayed in L.A., and I said, I'm going to form a second band, and I started looking for people. And I met this young girl in Chicago named Lonnie Hall, and I heard her singing, and she was beautiful and sang great. And I said, you know, would you like to join my band, and so forth. So I put together another band. The word got around. There was a band rehearsing and looking for a record deal. And so one day walked in Herb Alpert and Jerry Moss, A&M. So Herb signed us to A&M and produced the first album. And Herb Alpert presents Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66. And the year is 66.
And that made you huge in this country. I mean, that's when everybody knew.
That's right.
Who you were. Brazil 66.
Right.
It was the sound of the year 1966.
That's right.
This is just a little samba built up on a single note. Other notes are bound to follow, but the root is still that note. Now this new one is a consequence of a one we've just been through, as I'm bound to be the unavoidable consequence of you.
And you had suddenly a lot of fame in the United States.
Yeah, well, the album did very well, not only here, all over the world. It was a new sound, very simple, and great melodies, and people just, you know, loved that kind of sound everywhere, in Brazil also. The second album we recorded, The Look of Love, it was a follow-up hit.
The look of love is in your eyes, a look the time can't disguise.
In a minute, we'll continue our special conversation with o legendário Sergio Mendes. Fique com a gente, as they say in Brazil. Stay with us.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. You're listening to Latino USA.
and to our extended conversation with pianist Sergio Mendez.
In 2006, you make a huge return recording with, for those of you who know the Black Eyed Peas, Will.i.am, and the album Timeless. So how do you meet Will.i.am?
I got a phone call from his record company, and I was told that, you know, there was a band called the Black Eyed Peas, which I didn't know about it, that he would like to come to my house and to meet me. And I'm very curious, and I spoke to my son, which is now my Gustavo. I talked about, he's now 21, and I have a 15-year-old, and they know, they all knew who the Black Eyed Peas were. And so Will came over, and he had a lot of records, my old records.
He walked in with his records?
Yes, my own records, yeah, you know, all the old A&M things. And he told me that growing up in L.A. as a kid, he was listening to that kind of music and so forth.
Oh, my God, that must have been incredibly special for you.
Very much so. Yeah, I was very surprised. I couldn't believe it. It's like a young kid, he knew all about it. He knew all the songs. He knew about Baden Powell. He knew about Jobim. He knew about Mashkenada. Anyway, and so he invited me to play a song on his album, Elefunk. And I did, and it was a Brazilian song, and that song was on the movie Be Cool, and we performed on the cabaret scene.
Oh my gosh!
Yes.
I think I remember that.
The song is Insensatez, you know, how insensitive, and a beautiful song. But I really enjoyed the working with him and playing piano on that track. I felt it was something really different.
And then Mashkenada comes back 40 years later.
Right. And then after that, I decided to record, and I invited him to join me and produce the album, the first album, the album Timeless. And the first song was Mashkenada 40 years later. And 40 years later is a hit again.
Mashkenada, Black Peas came to make it hot. We beat the fire starter, bubbling up just like lava. Like lava, heated like a sauna, penetrating through your body armor. Rhythmically we massage ya, with hip-hop mixed up with samba. With samba, so yes, yes, yo.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you then know that generationally, it's not just to have a number one song all over the world, but then to know that there's a whole other generation.
That's right, that will discover that same melody if it's presented in a different way.
So you release Encanto this
yes,
year.
Yes, this is the new one, yes.
Also collaborating with Will.i.am.
Will participated in about 3 tracks because he was very busy, and he went down to Brazil with me, but he had to come back after. So he co-produced A Look of Love, Funky Bahia, and Água de Beber. So we went down. I wanted to do this one in Brazil because Timeless was done in L.A. So I took him down to Rio and Bahia with me, Salvador. And, you know, this album I wanted to show, the diversity of Brazilian music. So you have the Afro chants of Bahia, you have the Escola de Samba in Rio, but I also have, besides Will and Fergie and great, you know, American artists, there's my wife sings in the album, and there's a bunch of Antonio Carlos Jobim songs and João Donato. And so this time I decided to have international guests from other countries, other cultures, like Juanes, that sings in Spanish, one of the songs. It's a Brazilian song by Donato and Joyce. And I think, you know, it's beautiful because I never done anything before in Spanish, and it's the first time. Yeah. And then I have an Italian artist named Giovanotti that we have kind of a duet thing. We sing in Portuguese and he answers in Italian. There's a girl from Zaire named Marie from Zap Mama.
I know. When I was looking, you know. I was like, what? You know, because it's, you know, Zap Mama and Will I Am. I mean, it's kind of like.
Why not?
Absolutely. Oh, I know. Love it. I mean, I, in fact.
Music being the international language, you know, it's like a celebration, you know.
But the fact that you still want to be, you know, I mean, you are clearly looking to be influenced, touched by what is out there, what is new, what is modern, what is honest in terms of music.
Right. And art comes from everywhere, from Africa, from Italy, from Brazil. And if you have an opportunity to work with other artists in a collaboration process and from different culture, I think it's wonderful because they're going to bring their own interpretation of the song. It's like working with a drummer from a different country or a bass player. I mean, actually, my bass player is from Sri Lanka. My other keyboard player is from Japan. I have two percussionists from Bahia. So, I mean, it's like my drummer is from Washington, D.C. So there you go.
If we could just all see the world as borderless in terms of not just music, but in other things, that would
right.
be wonderful. So, Sergio Mendes, are you optimistic about where we're going in terms of music and culture in this country, in the world? Is it a good time to be a musician? Is it a difficult time?
Music is great. I mean, music is so, you know, if you go to Brazil and if you go for Carnival, and it's like 1 week on the streets of people celebrating, dancing and singing, and in many other parts of the world, I mean, you see all those summer festivals all over. So I'm happy I'm a musician. I'm lucky.
And we're so happy you're a musician too.
Thank you
so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Un prazer.
Prazer.
The new album from Sergio Mendes is Encanto. It's available from Concord Records. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Thanks for listening. Latino USA is produced by Angela Maldonado, Alex Avila, Walter Morgan, and Benjamin Jacob. Our executive producer is Sean Collins. We had help this week from John Berman and PBS station Channel 13 in New York. To listen to our podcasts, go to latinousa.org or look for us on iTunes. Our listener comment line is 800-535-5533. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world, at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.